Hello and welcome to the Beyond Biotech podcast number 77, and it's the first of 2024, but I'm sure I'm not the first to wish you a happy new year. The holiday season definitely just flew by. I'm Jim Cornall and this is the weekly LaBiotech podcast, and to kick things off this year we're taking a look at a potential new treatment using gene editing of the microbiome to tackle acne. Xavier Duportet, CEO of Eligo Bioscience, is our guest this week, and we covered a lot of ground on gene editing and the microbiome, but of course, first, it's an opportunity to ask about the company and its origins.
So basically, Eligo was founded based on an invention we made at Rockefeller University and MIT together when I was doing my PhD, with on the MIT side, Tim Liu, Professor Tim Liu, and on the Rockefeller side, Professor Luciano Marafini. Is one of the inventors of CRISPR, one of the co-founders of Intellia Therapeutics, and David Bicard was a postdoc there. And so the ones working on CRISPR and the applications of CRISPR were mostly focused on how to use CRISPR in eukaryotic cells, we actually took the tangent and found out that if you basically use CRISPR, deliver CRISPR in bacteria and target the nuclease to create double-strand break in the chromosome of the bacteria. Since prokaryotic cells do not have the same machinery to repair double-strand breaks, it actually kills the bacteria. They have very inefficiently repaired the double-strand break, and so it can kill the bacteria. And so when we saw that, this is when we had basically the idea that this new mechanism of action could be used in the real world as a potential highly precise antimicrobial mechanism of action. And so this is basically how Eligo was started. We published two papers in Nature Biotech and filed some quite important IP, and then decided to translate this invention, this academic invention, into a biotech to create drugs to solve real unmet needs and address diseases that were caused by specific bacteria in the microbiome that were associated to a number of different diseases.
I guess you've said that you're creating a new class of transformative genetic medicines. I wonder if you could explain how that differs from current techniques.
Yeah, so basically I think most of the genetic medicines today are focusing on correcting or adding genes into eukaryotic cells. And so we are basically one of the only companies in the world that are developing genetic medicines to edit the genetic makeup of the microbiome. So we've basically found a way to deliver genetic cargos to bacteria in vivo, so in patients. And for this, we're leveraging viruses, not the typical viruses that you use to target human cells, eukaryotic cells, but viruses that are natural predators of bacteria, bacteriophages. And so as opposed to all the bacteriophage startups and companies, we are basically leveraging only the delivery capacity of the bacteriophage. So we're just using the shell of the virus. We remove all its natural genetic components, so the genetic code of the virus, and instead we package in the shell of the virus a completely synthetic DNA payload. So once we have this viral particle that contains our synthetic DNA payload, we use it to deliver the payload in specific bacterial populations of the microbiome. And the payload itself is really modular in terms of what we can encode in the payload. And so at Eligo right now, while we started by encoding in this payload CRISPR-Cas system, so the nuclease and the guide RNAs, now we have also demonstrated that we can package base editors that we use to not kill bacteria in the microbiome, but instead edit their genome. So whether it is to modify one base pair in a protein to inactivate the catalytic site of an enzyme, whether it is to modify a promoter to either increase or lower the production of a molecule from this bacteria in the body. The advantage of using a base editor compared to using a CRISPR is that we will not kill the bacteria. We will stably mutate this bacteria. So this can be useful for a number of applications where the bacteria associated in driving the disease is a commensal that cannot be eradicated from the microbiome, and you just want to modify how it functions in the microbiome. And the third type of payload that we're delivering is a payload that will enable the local expression of a molecule in the microbiome. So really, it's about adding new genes to the microbiome. So we're delivering one or multiple genes on a plasmidic form in the microbiome with our vectors. And then we basically turn microbiome populations into local drug factories. And so this really enables us to produce, you know, whether it is nanobodies or small molecules, very locally where the bacterial population we're targeting is residing, whether it's on the skin, whether it's in close to epithelial cells in the guts, in tumors. And so this really enables us to have this local production of molecules where the bacteria reside.
The microbiome has only really risen to prominence in, I guess, the last maybe 10 to 15 years. And usually people associate microbiome with gut health. Clearly, there are other implications for the health of the entire body. And I wonder if you could explain the importance of the microbiome in that respect.
Yeah, so, you know, we have trillions of bacteria that are living everywhere in our body, whether it's on the skin, in the lungs, in the guts, in the vagina, but also, you know, in tumors. Now, every month now, we started to have papers that highlight the presence of specific bacterial species within tumors. And so, indeed, most of the research has been focused on gut health. We at Eligo are focusing now, our lead program is focusing mostly on skin microbiome. What's, I think, fascinating right now is that in the past 10 years, we've basically looked at the microbiome at quite a high level. So we're using 16S sequencing, and so we could see difference in abundance of specific species, bacterial species. So this led to mostly correlation between, oh, there is, you know, this species that has an increased abundance in this disease or in this condition, and so it's likely to have a causal effect, or at least being part of one of the driver of the disease. And so this has been always hard, because sometimes actually it's not, you know, the cause, but it's actually a consequence of the disease state that then, you know, the gut is such in a state that's on these bacterial species can actually grow better. And so therefore takes over the niche. It's still hard for many conditions to really know if it's changes in terms of abundance of bacterial species is either a driving force of the disease or if it's a consequence of the disease state. But more recently, thanks to deeper sequencing capabilities and new metabogenomic capabilities, it has been possible to understand, to go at the gene level within the microbiome and start to understand relationship between the expression of specific genes from this microbiome and disease. And this is really where we believe that the technology, the platform technology we have, can have a real impact. Now, you know, to give you a couple of examples, typically, we know that in some tumor microbiomes and some species that are in tumors, there are some specific genes that when expressed actually drive pro-tumorigenesis pathways. We know in the gut now, in the gut microbiome, that there are specific genes that will metabolize hormones and that will have an effect on hormonal levels, not only in the guts, but then in the whole body. We know, and when I say we, it's, you know, the scientific community has elucidated that. We know the same way in terms of metabolism that there are specific genes that have been pinpointed to metabolize drugs that we're taking orally, and that if this gene is present in your microbiome, then it means that the drug will be degraded much more by your microbiome, and therefore its bioavailability will be significantly reduced. And for our lead program, typically, and this is some work that has been done internally at Eligo, we have, you know, found out that there are some specific genes that are responsible for the production of some virulence factor in skin commensal that is one of the driver of lesions in acne and moderate to severe acne vulgaris. And so as the technology to understand and read the microbiome genomes at scale, it's really exciting because now we're starting to go at the genetic level and understand one gene or multiple genes, the relationship between one gene or multiple bacterial genes and disease. And I think this is this precision that will really help us design drugs that will actually work to address microbiome-associated diseases.
everybody's microbiome is different. How do you account for those differences, and how do you pinpoint what the issues are in the microbiome that connect to that disease?
That's a great point. I think it's far from being elucidated. I think most of the disease where the microbiome plays a role are multifactorial. I think at least our approach at Illigo is to look at targets and diseases where the bacterial species we're targeting is present in everyone. And typically, when we look at acne vulgaris, the bacterial species we're targeting is called Cutibacterium acnes. It's a commensal bacteria that everyone has, really. And so we know, therefore, that when we apply the drug to the patients, it's not going to be so much a question of whether the patient has or doesn't have the bacteria we're targeting. And so it's in terms of stratification of patient, this is just much easier. The same for, you know, tumor microbiome. We have an early program on the tumor microbiome, and we're specifically focusing on a bacterial species that has been shown to be present in 80% of all the tumors in colorectal cancer patients. And so as of today, because of the knowledge we have of the microbiome, it kind of, you know, limits the applications for our platform. But still, there are many. But to really reduce this risk of viability, we're only focusing on indications where the presence or absence of these bacteria is not an issue.
What conditions will you be looking at initially, and how?
We at Illigo are focusing on skin disease right now because we have developed a vector that can deliver genetic payloads to the skin microbiome. And our lead indication, and this is the $30 million we've raised, the proceeds are going to be mostly used to push this lead indication to the clinic to get a proof of concept in patients. It's in moderate to severe acne vulgaris. And then we're developing the platform in the oncology space because indeed now it is pretty clear that most tumors are colonized by bacteria. And so we're focusing on targeting the bacteria inside the tumor, either to kill them very specifically, because it has been shown actually that removing bacteria from tumors does have an impact on the regression of tumors, or actually leverage the bacteria that are existing in the tumors to make them produce small molecules or immunomodulatory molecules to actually modify the tumor microenvironments. For instance, you know, increase the modify these tumor microenvironments to increase the efficacy of drugs, of immunotherapies, for instance. We are also working in the anti-infectious space, but this is a therapeutic area that we're not pursuing with our, you know, investor money. This is something that we're partnering with the pharma industry, with big pharmas. And this is where we're advancing programs ourselves. And this is what we can say right now about where we're going.
Sure. Could you tell me what EB-005 is and how that works?
Yeah, so EB-005 is a first-in-class modality that is a topical CRISPR treatment to treat moderate to severe acne vulgaris. So acne vulgaris is one of the most common skin diseases there is, and it can be mild, and the mild, there's not so much unmet need. We're focusing at Illigo on treating the moderate to severe. We're actually just in the US, it's 20 million patients. There's a huge unmet need that is often not really perceptible and seen by the common population. But when you have moderate to severe acne, you have between 40 and 60% of patients who are depressed. You have 80% who have post-inflammatory hyperpigmentation. And these patients have only two, basically the first line of treatments, which is not really working, which is mostly topical antibiotics or steroids. And the second line of treatment, which is the magic bullet, and I think everyone has heard about this drug, which is Accutane. The molecule is isotretinoin, and that is teratogenic, that has 100% side effects. And basically, it's really this last resort drug that dermatologists are really reluctant to prescribe. And even patients who are on this drug, more than 40-50% of patients drop out because of the side effects. And so it's been 30 years that in acne, there's been almost no innovation in the field. And only recently, there's been a hint that there is something about subpopulations of bacteria on the skin. So when you look at acne vulgaris and the disease itself, it's a multifactorial disease. It's an inflammation of the hair follicle. And, you know, whether it depends on what you eat, your hormonal stage, there's a number of factors that will change the hair follicle environment, production of more sebum, the pore is going to be clogged. But one of the key driver is actually the microbiome. And so on the skin, we have this bacteria called Cutibacterium acnes. It's a commensal that we all have on our skin. It represents 80% of the bacteria we have on our skin in terms of abundance. And healthy patients and acne patients do have these bacteria. What has been now shown is, and this is where the company at Eligo, we've done a lot of bioinformatic works also to really validate the targets, is that within this species of Cutibacterium acnes, when you look at acne patients and it increases with the severity of acne, you have a subpopulation within this bacterial species that actually is overrepresented in acne patients. And what characterizes this population, this subpopulation of within the species, is actually the expression of virulence factor, pro-inflammatory virulence factor, that are actually driving the inflammatory process in their hair follicle. And so what we're developing at Eligo is a highly precise CRISPR drug that will be delivered into this bacterial species on the skin. And we're programming the nuclease to specifically target regions in the bacterial genome that are unique to the subpopulation that is pro-inflammatory. And therefore, the whole goal of the treatment is to destroy these, very specifically, this subpopulation, while leaving the health-associated population of bacteria completely intact. And so this is kind of a game-changing, because when you look at the first-line treatments, which are topical antibiotics, first, they don't work because 80% of now the population has bacteria on the skin that are resistant to these antibiotics. But for and on the few people on which the antibiotics can still kill the bacteria, they will kill both the health-associated one and the acne-associated one. And so as soon as you stop the antibiotic treatments, basically both population will go up again, and so the lesions are going to appear again. And so the solution we provide is a highly safe solution in the sense that it's phage-derived. So our phage, we have billions of phage in our body. There's been now a number of trials with phages. So this modality itself is safe. The phages will only deliver the CRISPR in the bacteria, not human cells. And the efficacy will be brought by the killing of the pro-inflammatory strains. And what's interesting is that it's very likely to have a durable effect, which is something that, you know, dermatologists and treatment are looking for. Meaning when you kill just the pro-inflammatory subpopulation, then you free the niche for the healthy population to take over and fill this niche, and which will exert by itself a significant pressure for the 0.1% of the pro-inflammatory that you're not killed. You know, when you try to kill bacteria, you never kill 100%. But so if you have this niche taken by the health-associated one, then you will really prevent the very small fraction of pro-inflammatory ones you've left, you didn't kill, to grow again. And this is what we're going to study in the trials. I think this will be a game changer in the field because it's going to be safe and efficient and likely durable. And this is what patients are looking for.
Will it be something that's applied topically, and will it have to be reapplied, or just the ones?
Yeah, so I think it's going to be topically. It's going to be a gel, a topical gel. So the fundraising is going to help us to get to the clinic. So we're going to do a trial in the US with the planned proof of concept data in 25. And this trial will be a phase 1b 2a trial, so directly in patients. And so the goal will be to see, you know, signs for, of course, safety and tolerability, but first sign of efficacy, so potentially reduction of number of lesions, reduction of IGA score. And we're also going to look at this durability. We're going to try to generate first data on durability of treatment. For this first trial, we're going to do probably once or twice daily application for, you know, 8 weeks, just to try to maximize the chance to have this, chance of seeing impact on the disease. What we believe is that we'll have to use it probably a couple of weeks as an end product, but that's fine in the sense that this is typically what's done today with drugs, and, you know, there is quite some compliance for weeks is actually quite good in acne, and specifically in moderate to severe acne. Then, you know, whether after a treatment of 8 weeks, the durability will be 2, 3 months or 6 months before you need to reapply it. We'll see this in the next phases, in the next treatment clinical trials. But we're quite confident, actually, that the durability will be significant, because when you look at the stability, and there is some longitudinal data on skin microbiome, and you see that it doesn't vary really, really fast. Basically, when you look at the scale of years, you have, at least in this population of Cutibacterium acnes in this species, you have one or two clones that change over the course of years in patients. So we're quite confident that if we remove a few clones that are pro-inflammatory, the new state of the microbiome should be quite robust for at least a couple of months.
It's good news for people that have the condition, for sure.
So many of them. So I think that's that's great. And, you know, hopefully what's interesting is also it's a CRISPR drug. When you hear about CRISPR drugs, you were thinking millions of dollars in pricing, typically. The beauty is that we are producing our modality by classical bacterial fermentation. And so the costs of production of the molecule, of the modality, are, you know, logs lower than when you are producing eukaryotic gene editing therapy. And so the price of the drugs is also going to be logs lower.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that, because obviously with something like acne, the last thing that you need is for this to be so expensive that it's unrealistically priced.
Yeah, so basically, if you look at the first line antibiotics, it's about anywhere between close to $100 per month. And isotretinoin is between $4,000 and $6,000 for the treatment. And so I think our pricing will really depend on this, on the efficacy and the durability of the treatment. And but the cost of goods are, you know, totally reasonable when you think about a pricing like that.
For sure. You already mentioned cancer. Are there other diseases that this would be applicable to treating?
Yeah, so there are basically tons of diseases. Tons. The target list is expanding on a monthly basis. I think the question is then how much risk you're willing to take to develop the drugs. Every time, it's often a new bacteria that pops up. And so the question is, clearly there are links, and then it's how much do you invest to validate this link between the gene and the disease. But, you know, typically metabolic disease, hormonal disease, the drug interaction with the microbiome, and so bioavailability of drugs, typically the gut microbiome or the skin microbiome plays a tremendous role in modifying the small molecules you have in your body, mostly because a lot of them come from the gut. And so it's not so much like specific therapeutic indication. It's more about what is the mechanism, where does the molecules that has an impact on your brain, on your heart, on tumors, is metabolized, is produced. And so right now we're not focusing specifically on one or two therapeutic areas. We're mostly looking at specific bacterial reservoir and what happened in this reservoir, because like in gene therapy, it's like when you have a vector that can get to the organ you want, then you can treat a number of diseases that are associated to the organ. It's exactly the same for us. We see the microbiome as multiple organs. You have the skin microbiome, the gut microbiome, the tumor microbiome. And so we're developing these vectors for each of these microbiome. And then whether, you know, the skin microbiome, you have skin disease like acne, but you also have cancers, you have skin cancer, you have other skin disease. When you think about the gut, you have so gut disease, but again, we're more focusing on the molecules that are produced by the gut microbiome, and that can have an impact on the brain, on your heart, on tumors. And so basically, it's more like a platform play where we have delivery vectors that enables us to create, modify functions from these different organs that can have applications across therapeutic areas.
It's interesting that you mentioned that, because a few weeks ago on the podcast, we had a company on there that is tackling things like Alzheimer's by modifying the gut microbiome. Do you think there's a place for sort of a combination of treatments whereby you're manipulating the microbiome and changing it through your techniques?
Yeah, definitely. I think what's really important is to understand, as soon as you understand the mechanism by which the microbiome produces a small molecule that interacts, you know, with the gut-brain axis, as soon as you have identified that, then you can have treatments that, I don't know, decrease the amyloid plaque that are already there. And then in combination, you treat your microbiome to make sure that it doesn't lead to the creation of new amyloid plaques. It has been shown typically that there are some molecules produced by the gut microbiome that do trigger or are linked to the formation of these plaques. So I think indeed, I would say there is a big opportunity space in modifying the microbiome as combination therapy, either to potentially make the therapy more efficient or more durable and prevent relapse of disease typically.
One of the things that you announced recently was your Series B funding. What is the implication of that in your work?
That's an exciting milestone for the company. We have at Eligo advanced quite far in demonstrating, so in animal models, on the GMP manufacturing thing, side of things, on the regulatory pathways to bring our modality forward to the clinic. And so this fundraising is really will now help us to move to the next stage. So really bring this EB005 program from a lead candidate to a proof of concept in patients by the end of 2025. And so we're super lucky to have Sanofi Ventures, who led the round, BPI France through their fund InnoBio 2, our existing backers, Kosla Ventures and Seventure Partners, who are also supporting us again through this round. And it's going to be, I think, the round that will lead to the biggest value creation in the company, in the sense that we're finally going to be able to test our modality in patients, in real patients. And that's the cool thing with advancing with acne vulgaris and moderate to severe, is that we don't have to do a phase one in healthy patients. We can directly move to acne patients and have these efficacy signs of it, first sign of efficacy data coming out of this trial. So this will prove two things. First, it will be a very interesting asset play, because we'll have the acne asset and demonstrating that it has an impact on acne, on the severity of acne. It will also demonstrate the technology itself, you know, that we have a good target engagement and that we can deliver CRISPR in a human complex microbiome environment and modify the genetic makeup of the microbiome, de-risking basically the whole platform concepts in other therapeutic areas. And so this is why also in the background, while most, I mean, our focus will be clearly on delivering this proof of concept in patients in acne, we have also this earlier program in oncology, in other areas that are, we're advancing in the background, so that as soon as we have this proof of concept of the, this proof of concept data in acne, the platform has been de-risked. And so we can likely get another round to advance the acne program in phase twos, but get the other early programs in the clinic.
Well, that's certainly hopeful news for those suffering with acne, and also good for those who treat it. And it would seem that Eligo's platform will be able to tackle more than just acne. So it's a case of watch this space and follow the company's progress over the coming years. Don't forget to check out the latest news and articles at labiotech.eu. And I hope wherever in the world you are, you have a great week ahead. Thanks for listening, and I hope you'll join us next time for another Beyond Biotech.